Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Toronto-based jazz singer and songwriter Ori Degen. He opened up with Neon Jazz about his jazz roots, COVID life, and his new 2022 CD, Click Right Here, an album that offers a joyful escape, and it's also reflective on this world that's spinning out of control. Themes include online dating, social media, technical troubles, and the quest for freedom and equality in a very divided world. The singer brings a wry and agile sense of swing to everything he does, whether it's interpreting a standard, spinning a pop tune on its head, or introducing his own original music and lyrics. Enjoy the story.
Hey, man, thank you for taking a minute out. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about Click Right Here. You know, the timing of this album is pretty advantageous, I think, for you and a lot of musicians with the world waking up right now. What's the overall feeling of this release coming out right now?
Well, it feels really great to get it out in the world, because I've kind of been sitting on it for over a year. It's a project that really was something that I did during the pandemic to kind of get through it. So it was like written and recorded summer of 2020, fall of 2020.
So I guess with that being the context, so to speak, you know, we were in quarantine. There was a lot of self-reflection, a lot of things going on during that time. What did you learn about yourself over that time that maybe you didn't realize before that will make you stronger as we all reemerge and you promote this brand new album?
What a great question. I guess I learned that, you know, what I always do, and it reinforced a way of people connecting and healing. So, I mean, you know, this is one of the things that I did spend that time with working on this album. But I also was really active on social media, giving online concerts, grew my fan base around the world doing that. This particular album, it's something I've wanted to do for a long time. It seemed like the right time to do it, because in the back of my mind, I always wanted to write an album about the current time and all these beautiful standards that I've been singing for many years. I love the standards. There's something about, you know, the current moment, and I've always in the back of my mind thought, oh, why can't we have a jazz song that's about Google or Facebook or things that are actually relatable day to day? And I think that, you know, first of all, this pandemic gave me some time to work on it, but also it made me realize how much, even more, how reliant we are on technology these days. So it kind of seemed pretty relevant even more.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I've thought about that a lot in the context of jazz. I mean, jazz has evolved and become a modern organism throughout what most people would refer to jazz as something that came out a long, long time ago. And there was all these references to things that are pre-technology, so to speak. It's almost like watching a David Lynch film. Like, you kind of feel like it's modern, but it's still kind of steeped in this, like, 50s, 60s era, you know?
Right.
But I think, too, that the interesting thing that the pandemic did for artists, not just, you know, people, musicians, but visual and writers, is this, we are in an epicenter of history right now that is like a Bob Dylan moment. I mean, there is so much going on that if you have a creative bone in your body, there is a horn of plenty to pick from to start kind of going with.
Absolutely. You know, I was really lucky. Here in Canada, we have this granting system, and I got a grant to write an original album. I actually received the grant January of 2020. So it was actually going to be an album about jazz. Like, I was going to pay homage with original songs to some of the people that inspired me to create this music. But then as soon as all this stuff happened, I just thought, I'm not putting out an album about jazz in a global pandemic. Like, it's just not happening. Like I said, it really kind of just seemed like the right time. And I'm really hoping that, you know, people connect with the song. The other thing that's important, I think, to note is that my target with this record is not even necessarily the jazz hardcore fans. I mean, that would be great. If any jazz people love this record, I would be really happy. But I kind of made it for people that don't know anything about jazz. I mean, to me, there's a huge appeal in, you know, writing lyrics that are relatable to everybody. I think that so many people out there don't know anything about jazz because it's become such an underground music. And for me, it's been kind of, for my whole career, but especially now, it's been a goal to bring more people into this music.
I hear that more and more from musicians, too. You know, one of the biggest thrills is the pulling people, you know, if you're at a show that typically aren't jazz fans, you know, that's kind of the appeal, you know. I've got a quick side note here. Every time I interview a musician from Canada, my appreciation and love for your country always goes up. I mean, and I mean this genuinely. I've always known that the national hero is the one that came up with the universal health care there, which is just genius to me, coming from America, where most people can go bankrupt if they break their arm. It's unreal. And then I hear a lot of artists talk about grants they get, and I feel like your society and the mental health of the Canadian people, knowing that your government is holding art and health in a high regard, has to be a comforting feeling.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a really amazing, it's funny, the neighbor's grass is always greener, right? We're always like dying to come to New York City, but no, thanks for saying that. It's a really great, this particular project could not have happened without this support, so I'm really, really grateful. I mean, the scope of it too, like I don't think I would have been able to do an 8-piece band with 4 horns, and you know, it really kind of pushed me. It gave me a boost to say, yeah, okay, go for it, let's see what happens.
Talk to me a little bit about, going back in your beginnings, you're a Toronto native. How did this love of jazz begin for you, singing, and kind of turn into who you are today?
Sure. Well, actually, I was born in Haifa, Israel, and I moved to Canada when I was 8. So I kind of do feel like a Canadian. I did grow up, I've always been a musician, like since I was really, really young. I played classical piano from age 6 to 16, and I had no jazz in my life. I did not grow up singing. I knew about classical music. There was some Israeli pop music in my house. I got into jazz by way of the gateway drug that is Ella Fitzgerald, like so many other singers. And it was Ella's album. There were actually 2 albums, I have to say. I got 2 albums in the same week. This is back in the day where there were still compact discs being sold at bookstores, and I just thought, this one looks pretty cool. It was Ella McKnife Live in Berlin, and that, of course, is the record where she allegedly forgets the words and makes up her own words, and that's followed by an encore 9-minute scat epic version of How High the Moon. So it was that record, really, that got me hooked. The other one that I got the same week that I always like to mention is Dinah Jams with Dinah Washington in front of a live audience, and some really brilliant, like Clifford Brown's on that record, and Wynton Kelly and Harold Land, and really beautiful. So pretty soon I was just really, really hooked. I mean, I still had a Discman back then, and I used to just buy all these jazz CDs, and I have to say, for about 2 or 3 years, I didn't really talk to anybody. I just listened to these records. And another singer that had a huge, huge impact on me is Anita O'Day. And I think for me, like, I really got into her sense of humor and the way that she kind of stylized songs to suit her and played with rhythm. The other artists that really, really shaped me that aren't singers are Lester Young, who's my favorite musician, and Bird, of course. And I also, you know, I started to follow around performers that were still alive from that time. I got to see Mark Murphy live when he was still around. And, of course, Sheila Jordan, who's like my mentor, my guru. I studied with her over time, followed her around, and took her workshops. And she is 93 years young. And if anyone is able to see Sheila Jordan live, I urge you to do it. It'll change your life. There's nobody like this woman.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, and I don't know if it's akin to this, but Marilyn May, who's a Kansas City native, I saw her probably before the pandemic, which is probably about 2.5-3 years ago. My producer of my show, my engineer, it does the American Songbook, and it's called The Neon Beat. He's a wonderful human being, and I surprised him with tickets to the show. Uh-huh. And Marilyn had such a command in a bedside manner that you don't see anymore. Like, yeah. It was kind of like you're saying, there used to be a thing called compact discs. You know, kids have no idea what you're talking about. We used to go to Tower Records. We go to these stores. That's how we found our music. And I think about that when you talk about Sheila and even Marilyn, like there's a command, there's a way that's not just singing. It's this performance. It's this product that you can hardly label because it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen Marilyn, not do a whole show, but I've seen her at Birdland, and oh man, that's really what has always driven me is live performance. So, yeah. You know, getting to see people like this, it's invaluable.
You know, the one thing that my engineer, John Christopher, a good friend, he told me too was, Johnny Carson, Marilyn was one of the very few people that he would literally jump to his feet and clap and say, now that's how it's done. Like, of all the people that he ever, you know. So if you get the blessings of someone like Johnny Carson, you've been anointed by the Apostle John. So,
well said.
So, you know, speaking of all the music you listened to, when you finally got out and saw your very first live jazz show, what was it? How did that feel?
What a great question. Let me think about that. There is quite a beautiful scene here in Toronto. I remember more, I'd have to really think about that and write you, but I think what I really remember is going to the jam sessions. Because it's something that I still do, like, all the time. But, I mean, back then, that was really, really a big thing for me. I remember there was one time at the Montreal Jazz Festival where there was this huge jam session, and it really was a moment for me because I'd been singing for a few years. And the thing about singing jazz or any kind of singing, I think, is that people don't realize how hard it is to get up in front of an audience, even for seasoned people. But especially for people who are figuring out what they're doing. And so it's funny to me now because, I mean, I do this all the time and, you know, I get nervous and stuff. But, you know, once I'm up there, it's all great and it's the best feeling and it's worth it. But, you know, back when I was starting out, I remember just getting so petrified of this and thinking of the absurdity of it. Like, this is what I'm doing with my life, creating stress. So, you know, I've been really, really fortunate that I kept going, you know, all this time, and I've had the encouragement of people, and I've also had the other thing that performers need is honest feedback from people around them to say, you know, maybe don't do that or don't say that.
Well, and speaking of that, you know, staying in here and doing what you're doing, what is the best part of being a professional musician for you? You know, every day you wake up, this is your reality. What do you love the best about it?
Definitely, you know, playing to an audience that wants to hear what I've got to say. I mean, definitely being on stage. And also, you know, we touched on this, but getting people into it that don't know anything about it. I love that. The best compliment I've ever received is, hey, man, I don't like jazz, but I like you.
For sure. If you could get into a time machine and go back in time, I think I probably may know the answer to this, but just want to know for sure. If you could go back and see anybody anywhere, where are you going? Who are you going to see?
I would say Ella Fitzgerald in like 1957. Or sometime in the late 50s. She just could do no wrong. I mean, I did have the chance to meet Anita. I might have said Anita, but I got a chance to meet Anita. It would have been nice to see her in her heyday. But I think I kind of owe it all to Ella. And there still is, there's something so magical about her. Especially the live recordings, and we're so lucky that we have so many of her recordings. She did over 2,000 songs in her career that are on record. But, you know, she still boggles my mind because it's so effortless. It just seems like she's talking, and she's actually doing really, really intense musical, making these amazing musical choices. I remember I was studying, one of my first teachers was a great sax player named Bob Mover, who worked with Chet Baker and Charles Mingus, and I remember him telling me, you know, at the end of the day, Ori,
it boils down to a few things. You know, you've got to know your stuff. You've got to know your instrument and the limitations of your instrument. And then you've got to have taste. And that's the thing that you can't teach people. And that's what people like Ella really has. It's like she never made a bad musical decision.
So why do you love jazz?
I think it's because of the possibilities for joy and the possibilities for finding freedom and community. You know, I love the fact that you can go to any city in the world and just sit in on a jam session and make beautiful music with people that you don't know and probably become friends very soon after that.
So as we do return to live music and things are opening up, what do you hope we all realize about the power of live music as we get back to it?
I'm already seeing more interest in it here in Toronto, which is really, really encouraging. I think that we're in a good place. You know, we've gone through so much. But I think that there's definitely a heightened interest in it. And it feels like there's certainly a renaissance right now going on, at least around here.
So everyone has a perception or an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. Who do you think you are?
Wow, that's cool, man. I've never had that question. Who do I think I am? I think I am, as inspired by Sheila, I am a jazz ambassador trying to take this music, bring it forward and bring it to new people, new listeners.
Great answer, man. Hey, it was great to get to know you, Ori. Thank you for taking a minute out. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for your interest and all your great work.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest singers and players in Toronto, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Ori for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. For everything Joe Domino related, go to JoeDomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can subscribe to Patreon or donate a few bucks there. And until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.